Mini episode 681 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 681. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. This conversation today is going to be a lot of fun. The gentleman that we have on the lines, I hadn't actually mentioned this to anybody internally. Fortunately, guest booker Steve Cervillo was able to get him. But this was somebody that, again, I had sort of had my eye on for a little period of time here. I don't always think to mention that to somebody just because I never know how the guest booking is going to shake out. So I hadn't even necessarily targeted him per se. But I was very intrigued to see that we were going to be speaking to him. Because, again, if you go back to the beginning of the FDH Lounge, just having celebrated our ninth anniversary, having spun off as a partner brand with FantasyDraftHelp.com, trying to take the focus that we put on fantasy sports and apply it to anything in the world, trying to be the widest variety talk show out there, well, inevitably you're going to come back to certain subcultures amidst some of the other mainstream topics that you're talking about, whether it be the NFL or politics or whatever. And I will say the most loyal of any of the subcultures out there that I have found thus far in the internet has been pro wrestling fans. And I think it kind of bears it out when you take a look at how our interviews with various wrestling figures have been received over a period of time. And I would say even surpassing the times that we have delved into melodic rock. I think for as much as people have appreciated checking out the late, great Jimmy Jameson with us or some of the other fellows in there, Bobby Kimball, Steve Smith, et cetera, I think wrestling fans are more loyal than anyone else out there as far as a dedicated group of listeners who want to check out content. And that ties into this gentleman today because he has found a way to, I would say, really transform the shoot wrestling industry. Because, again, it was a very low bar when he got into it some years ago. It's a bar about 3 inches off the ground, quite frankly, I would say. But this guy has taken a pole vault and gone way over where that bar is. Because, again, you're looking at a thing where sometimes with shoot interviews you're getting the disembodied voice off camera. I guess that's if you're lucky, because otherwise it might be some jabron sitting there in a tracksuit. This guy is always styled nicely in a suit. He definitely is able to banter with the guests very well, very, very smooth in what he does. I always thought to myself, gee, this guy's really good. I wonder what he has done that kind of prepared him for this. Then when I saw that he was on the show, going to be booked for today, I dug into it a little bit, saw that he'd spent some time before in front of and behind the camera. That is, in terms of acting and directing and producing. So that really didn't surprise me because, again, he's clearly very good at what he does. And if you spent any time at all looking up shoot interviews on YouTube, his series pops up almost immediately. There's almost an endless line of them. I speak, of course, of Sean Oliver from Kayfabe Commentaries. It's a pleasure to welcome him to the program. Sean, I'm glad to welcome you to the program today, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing well with an introduction like that. I have no choice but to be doing well, don't I? I'm buried in snow. I should point out.
Yeah, you're snowed up in the east there. How bad is it?
I had a couple of feet. It was brutal.
Ooh.
Where are you?
Fortunately, well, that bypassed us here on America's North Coast, I am happy to say. Cleveland generally gets brutalized on these types of deals, but went right by us, Sean. I'm very happy to report.
Well, you missed this one, but something will get you out there in Cleveland. You're buried in something.
Well, yeah.
It won't be Super Bowl rings, though. I know that.
It won't be, yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. it may not be NBA rings after having blown out our head coach the other day. I'm sure you've been following that whole bloodbath and everything that's been going on with the latest chapter of LeBron's follies in town here. So, it's always nice to be able to turn our attention to the distracting pursuits of life, like as has been described by one of our regulars on the show, the sport of kings, the greatest sport of them all, pro wrestling. That's where you come in. And as I said when I was setting up the introduction, I had noticed kind of from YouTube not only that your company does a good job of doing the production and the formatting of these things, but I'd always thought, gee, this guy personally seems very well suited towards this. Like I said, started digging into your background when I saw that you were going to be booked. And like I said, I was not very surprised at what I came up with. But in your own words, what about your background basically prepared you for what you're doing right now?
Well, I was a wrestling fan for a long time. So, I mean, that's the foundation.
Sure.
And when you're a wrestling fan, particularly most people find it as a kid because it's got a larger-than-life hero versus villain recipe to it. So that tends to appeal to our youth. I think when you get hooked when you're young like that, it never really leaves you. So there's for some guys, the extension of their youth manifests itself in collecting comic books, maybe, or superhero films. You know, there's no shortage of them these days. The era I grew up in, the 70s and early 80s, wrestling was the thing. And our starting this company was an extension of our having been wrestling fans as kids, and then watching with a new awareness in the 90s when the dirt sheets came out and we were allowed to peek behind the curtain a little bit. What piqued our interest was the machinations of the business. And shoot interviews popped up around that time, 95-ish, I guess. And, you know, fast forward out, well, we've been around about 9 years now, so it would have been, 2007, we made our foray into the industry. And you are not mistaken by saying that the bar has been set about an inch and a half off the ground. So, you know, my background in entertainment and also having worked on Wall Street, I kind of was able to come at the business from both a business perspective but also a production perspective, and maintaining the elements of production which are non-negotiable in the real world. Good mics, lights, you know, some good cameras,
sure.
And some preparation and a host who can steer things. Those were non-negotiables just because having come up in legit entertainment, that they're always
mm-hmm.
present, precursor. So by applying that to what had been offered prior in shoot interviews, I think our viewers just took to us naturally because it showed a respect. It's beyond just being a professional in the industry. It's respect. I can't ask somebody to spend $20 for something that doesn't feel like $20 when they watch it. It's got to feel like it. So it's just it's a basic respect for your viewer. I mean, that was really the core of it.
Absolutely. And I want to get to the specifics here in a second on the brands involved and some of the distinctions in case some of our listeners may not be fully aware of all of those. But you talk about that, and yes, there's obviously a lot of respect for the product, and that shines through. But what also shines through, too, and one of the things that I've respected about what you guys do, you have a good ability to obviously bounce off of the talent vis-a-vis when things get a little bit absurd. And quite frankly, if anybody wants to go out here, do a YouTube search on Danny Doring Roadkill if you want to hear what I'm talking about. A perfect example of that. You made the little crack about, well, this isn't Meet the Press. That's on the next channel. So I respect that you're able to do that and that you don't take yourself overly seriously and that you're kind of in on the joke when things do cross over to that extreme. And what's interesting, too, is that there's some others, too. Missy Hyatt, she's been on our show. I've seen that from her. She's somebody that's in on the joke and can kind of laugh at stuff when it gets absurd. Does that tend to be more so kind of standard as far as these guys when you're dealing with them, or is the ability to kind of poke fun at yourself or the situation a little bit kind of rare?
Well, you know what? I always say that I'm not in the wrestling business. I'm not in the wrestling
mm-hmm.
industry. You know, I have a production company that covers wrestling. You know,
yes.
You would say CNN is in politics. You would say CNN covers politics. So, but of course, having been around the characters that permeate the business, wrestling business, you can find yourself becoming steeled to some of the discussion. So there are some moments where I force myself to step out of myself and be the layperson and listen to the ridiculous story being told, whether it's of a sexual nature and the exploits of some of the wrestlers and the, and their in their more popular years when they were followed around by, you know, rats is the derogatory term that been used, but,
right?
Or just something so bizarre, the decisions that are made by some of these people. Hearing a story where someone's door's taken off on the side of the highway and they proceed to drive to the city, you know, with no door. So it's easy to lose yourself in what is sometimes standard fare in the discussion with wrestlers. But, you know, I have to remind myself that when I'm sitting down hosting a show, I am the viewer. I'm 100% the viewer, and that's the secret. Anyone watching one of our programs, be it a You Shoot or something which is kind of uncensored, wild, and that, or even something more of a historical nature like the Timeline series or Guest Booker, I have to remind myself that I have to be a conduit. I'm kind of channeling our viewers. So I need to ask what's probably on their minds. My reactions should be genuine in that nature, in that I am a viewer when I'm sitting there. And those are the best shows, by the way. When I can lose myself and I'm not worried about the timing or staying on track or where I am in the script versus, you know, how many minutes I've got in the can already. When I can just lose myself in a discussion, like two guys or me and a lady, depending on who the guest is, just losing ourselves in the discussion. Those are the best shows. I think I went 3.5 hours with Roddy Piper. It felt like 6 minutes.
I can believe that. That must have been absolutely incredible to have the chance to do something like that. And I like your description there because it feels kind of real to me. It does sort of feel like we're watching you sort of being us watching it at home. And that's a great thing that you're able to do, is just kind of be the voice of the viewer, because when you're cracking up at something, we're all cracking up watching it. And that's it's something that you're really kind of plugged into. Elaborate a little bit, please, on the brands involved here, in as much as this is not a wrestling show per se, but a show that touches on wrestling. So for the benefit of anybody that doesn't understand, as I do, the differences between You Shoot and the Timeline and some of the other ones in there, please spell those out a little bit.
Right. Oh, well, I'm glad you told me that. By the way, anyone who's not a wrestling fan who's sitting and listening to this, please, there's got to be something else you could do with your evening. Listening to me ramble about wrestlers, talking about me defecating under the ring, for God's sake. Plenty to watch. There's plenty of entertainment.
Don't tell them that.
we launched our first – first of all, the shoot interviews that were being done prior to our entry in the market – were specific to one wrestler or a team, a tag team's career. So they would sit someone down in front of the camera, interrogation style, head on a platter, you know, zoom right in, set the camera, set it and forget it, and, you know, ask 3 hours worth of questions about the particular wrestler's career. Well, after that had gone on for 10 years or so, we'd heard all the stories, we'd heard who trained everyone, so we wanted to apply some traditional television formatting to it and do them in the form of a series. So our first series was Guest Booker. We got a booker, which is just a wrestling term for a creative individual who makes the decisions in wrestling, who wins, who loses. Today they'd be called a writer. And we would bring in a booker from wrestling's history and give them something to book on camera that they had nothing to do with in their career, in reality. So to the layperson, I often describe it as, imagine getting the writers of Seinfeld in a room and making them write an episode of Star Trek and filming the process. So that was kind of the idea there. So we did a few of those. They were well received. We thought we could expand. We moved to the You Shoot series, which is I sit one of the more provocative individuals in wrestling, and there's no shortage of them. sit a lightning rod down next to me and conduct and host an interview, I should say, that is conducted entirely by fans. So it's all fan videos and fan questions that I read to the guests. So they are sometimes of a salacious nature or antagonistic or just, you know, genuine questions about their career and life that maybe had not been public to that point. So it was entirely, the concept was to have an interview entirely conducted by fans. Could we pull this off? And we did. It became one of them, probably our most popular series next to Timeline. Then from there, we have the Timeline series, Timeline, the History of WWE. I was listening or watching one of these shoot interviews done by a different company. The guest was superstar Billy Graham, and I think they spent a total of, with a minute and a half on, like, the title change when he won the title from, when he won the title in the Garden. And I said, no, wait a minute, that could be a whole, just that event alone. So I said, what if we did a series? No one's ever going to write the book that I want to read about the history of the WWF. It would be 1,200 pages, and it would have to be so copiously researched. They would never produce it in Connecticut themselves because of some of the nature of some of the things they'd be talking about. Can't have shareholders hear about that sex scandal that happened. You know, we don't want the shareholders to know that we had some issues with steroids in 1992. So, you know, it would be a sanitized version of history. You know, you can't tell your own history. So we're not in the business of publishing. So I said, what if we did one entire 2-3 hour DVD on just 1 year each? And eventually the fans' shelf would fill with volumes of this story sorted by year in chronology, 40 discs, told each disc, told by somebody who worked in a prominent position in that company near the top of the card or in a creative capacity where they could comment on more or less everything that went on that year, whether they were involved or not. They were somebody who was prominent enough in the locker rooms and in Titan Tower and on the road where they were around all of the stuff that was going on. And we give everybody a year. We give Greg Valentine 1985, and we go through January through December with them. We do tons of research, and a lot of the stuff jogs their memory when I bring it up. But it's a first-person account, which will eventually be told by, you know, we're up to 2022 as of next week when Vince Russo covers 1998. So it's an open-ended series, the history of the company told by the stars themselves. No historians, no pundits, no website hosts. It's told first-person accounts by the stars. And then we spun that series off to hit the Timeline, the History of WCW, and then ECW. So the three biggest companies are covered in the Timeline series. And then more recently, and this is a very long-winded answer, I may have put the entire audience that aren't wrestling fans to sleep, so they don't even have to
watch
the channel or finding something else to do. They're getting a nap. So then what we started to do as of last year, I thought it necessary to – listen, I began hosting these shows very much out of necessity. I'm a bit of a control freak by nature, and the only way that I guarantee that we get the result on tape that I wanted is if I was sitting there with the star myself steering the whole thing. So I just threw myself up there and started. Now I think we've established the format and popularized the format to the point where we can start getting some celebrity hosts. So that's the direction we're headed now. Last year we launched a series hosted by Jim Cornette called Back to the Territories, where each edition of the series, he tackles one of the classic wrestling territories before it was a national event. For those of you that are, you know, hoping I'll hurry up so you can get to Entertainment Tonight, it was broken up into territories. So Cornette hosts that and brings one of the stars from that territory in, and they cover it from soup to nuts. We also this year have a new series called Raven's Wrestler Rescue, which is a makeover show. But instead of, putting the fat bride through the ringer to try to turn her into the pretty girl, Raven of ECW fame, plucks an independent talent up and remakes their gimmick, their character, their promo, goes over in-ring stuff, and then relaunches their character in front of a crowd, relaunches them with a new character, I should say, in front of a crowd, to see as the true litmus test to see if it fails or succeeds. So we have a lot of different ongoing series. We have something for everyone. That's kind of the goal. We function like any network or, you know, studio system. You know, we want to try to cover as many bases as possible with our series.
Absolutely. I'm glad you spelled it out like that, because I'm sure there's even some wrestling fans out there that didn't really understand the full depth of the differences between the brands and what you're trying to bring here. What's interesting is among the names you mentioned there was Jim Cornette, who is part of, I don't know how big the overlap on the Venn diagram is between you guys and us, but we've had Cornette on, J.J. Dillon, Missy Hyatt, Bret Hart. I'm trying to think of who else we have in common, but you had made some observations that I thought were very interesting and that surprisingly I can't really quibble with, and that being about the fact that it's generally better for wrestlers to come appear on something like what you do rather than on podcasts, because podcasts being part of the talk show lineage, traditionally talk shows don't pay guests, DVDs do. So when you look at the monetization and what's best for the wrestlers, again, and I can't really quibble with that as much as I would like to. I certainly hope that wrestlers continue to accept our invitations from time to time, but I think you have an interesting point there. I have two questions I'd like to ask you about that. One is if you see any kind of potential symbiotic relationship between the podcast community and what you guys are doing in terms of, again, talk shows have always existed in part to promote ongoing projects, much as we are promoting Kayfabe Commentaries here today. Given that you're always getting the prime rib from these guys, you can pull from several hours worth of material from them versus whatever a talk show host gets from them, 20 to 30 minutes an hour, you're generally probably getting the better stuff anyways because you have more to pick from. So my first question is, do you see any kind of, again, symbiosis potentially between this as far as if somebody's appearing on one of your DVDs but they're plugging it ahead of time or after it comes out on somebody else's show?
Yeah, it all depends how the material's handled, and it also all depends on what the talent does. My comments on that and my feelings on that were more on behalf of the talent. And I'm not talking about guys that can work still. I'm talking about guys that are comfortably retired and confidently retired, I should say, but still have to earn a living. Their legacy and their story, that's their commodity right now. That's the product they have, their past. So just as I've said that they're giving it away far too frequently on the internet for free, we also approach people all the time to come on our shows for money, and they'll tell us, well, I have a book coming out, I can't. And I understand that. So they've got to keep some of it in-house to monetize their story. And if they're not going to do it on a guest booker and they're doing it on a book, that's fine. It's a different route to the same result.
Sure.
If the talent is aware enough that my appearance tonight on XYZ podcast for free will be to talk about my book a little, talk about my upcoming DVD, or just to pique interest from other producers that will be paying, then they'll handle that interview as such. And if they have the awareness to do that, then that's fine. But if they're spending 2 hours on three podcasts a week, they've really watered down their value, and their last remaining commodity, it's not the suplex, it's the story about the suplex. So if you give that away for free, you're giving your product away for free. So they need to be aware of that.
Sure, sure. And as I said, that's not really something that I can quibble with, even if it's somewhat, as they say in a court of law, arguing against interest for me to admit that. But I certainly see your point on that. Now, I've got another question about podcasts. I feel like we kind of got the low-hanging fruit out of the way there as far as getting an answer from you, but you don't do low-hanging fruit, I've seen from your shows. We don't do it here on this show. This is where I think the equation gets a little more murky, and that being the big guys from the business who've jumped into the podcast land, whether it be Flair or JR or Jericho or Austin. I know there was an example where Austin had on Tommy Rogers because he admired him greatly, thought he was maybe the best babyface tag wrestler he'd ever seen, and I couldn't quibble with that myself. I was a big Tommy Rogers mark. Mm-hmm. Now, for something like that, there's not going to be any money attached to it, but when you've got one of the giants of the business inviting you on their show, and there's not necessarily anything monetarily attached to it, you are raising your profile. But I mean, philosophically, where do you come down on that because of the boost that it gives, at least in terms of visibility, if nothing else?
Well, I guess each situation has to be judged on its own merit. And yeah, if Tommy Rogers can get the opportunity to be heard by 4 million people because he's talking to Steve Austin, you'd be an idiot not to take it. Sure, that'll spread, you know, and that'll add to probably some increased interest in Tommy. So you got to judge each. You got to judge each case on its own merit.
That's a good answer. That's about where I thought you would come down on that, but I was very interested to hear your take because, it's a very crowded landscape, ever more crowded on the podcast landscape these days as so many great people are getting into it and stirring up more interest but making it a much more competitive landscape as well.
Let me say this before we move off that because it's worth discussing further.
Yeah.
There is always – for us anyway here at Kayfabe Commentaries, there is always the very real fact that it almost doesn't matter what show somebody that we've got interest in is going to go on because no one is going to do with them what we will. Tommy Rogers spending time talking to Steve Austin. We don't really do just the traditional broad stroke interview. The closest we come to that, we have a series called Breaking Kayfabe, where I talk to folks with very storied out of the ring life, and we cover that stuff. It's a kind of a different vibe, more of an intimate, maybe Charlie Rose type feel to that series. But my point is, no one's going to do what we do. There's only one timeline series, and Steve can sit down with anybody and talk about whatever comes to his mind in very entertaining fashion. But when we have our guest on, it's going to be an addition to your timeline series, that open slot on your shelf covering 1984, is now going to be covered by him. And we're going to go January through December, and we're going to cover all the events in WCW or whatever the particular guest is covering, whatever federation. And we're going to go through that. Or if it's a U-shoot, you know what? We're going to put our games in there. We're going to put kind of our uncensored Q&A style in there, and we're going to give it the U-shoot flavor. No one's got that secret sauce. So I never personally worried when anybody goes on other shows. Because I always say, you can buy the guitar, but you're not going to play like Eddie. So
absolutely.
There's a very, very specific use we have for each of our talent when they come on our shows. The booker, if they come on guest booker, they're going to be booking and talking about booking. So we're so special. Each of our series is so specialized. We don't really worry about a particular individual just kind of going out and making the round. But I was just talking to the talent from the standpoint of my being concerned that they're giving away their product for free. But by us, we're pretty insulated from competition.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I wanted to – you didn't disappoint me there. I wanted to drill down on the philosophy of it with you, and I knew you'd get into it and explain it from your point of view pretty well. And again, as I said before, I mean, I think it would almost be kind of arrogant for any of us in the podcast community to think that we're providing competition because, again, we're doing a live interview with somebody. You've got hours worth of stuff to go through. You have a specific format. Absolutely. I don't think anybody would argue if they're looking at it that what anybody out there is doing is competition. But as you say, again, wrestlers should always be pursuing their own best interest, and I think we can all agree on that. However it goes. I'd like to get to a little bit before we bring this full circle here, just getting your thoughts on the philosophy of the biz a little bit. I'm going to start with something that I caught from a conversation you had with Kevin Nash where he was talking about his character in late 95, early 96, almost being sort of proto Stone Cold. And he was complaining in that about Vince always trying to put baby faces in a certain mold. And he said that, you know, Lex Luger was a perfect example in 93. And I have to tell you, on our show, as we've been going through and doing an ongoing series looking at the Royal Rumbles year by year, that I had sort of made up the term white meatification of baby faces. I feel like that's something they always try to do, whether it be Triple H in early 02 going from the sledgehammer to Lucy the pet dog, or I kind of felt like maybe there was a little bit of that happening with Rock at the same time too. Maybe he started getting booed because he wasn't being as nasty. He didn't have the edge. He was sort of a little more white meat. I mean, what are your thoughts about that over time, as far as that being one of the big tropes in company history that they seem to keep going back to, and how seemingly it's affecting what they're doing with Roman suffering succotash Reigns right about now?
Well, Vince and his people, decision or not, I don't know. But they've always been good at being a mirror for what happens with the trends that are happening in traditional entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, in 95 and that era with Reservoir Dogs and Quentin Tarantino films, the good guys were the bad guys now. You know, we wished we could talk and had the swag of the bad guys. So that gave birth to that movement in wrestling. So you've kind of got to look around now and see what gets over with people. Who are we back to the superheroes maybe in old superhero films? Are they maybe more complex superheroes now? Do we need some of that dimple-faced white meatification to steal your term? I don't know. You'd have to look at the, is it working? Is the first question. And please also realize, I've said this so many times, the decisions made in Connecticut are business decisions which are entirely aimed at pleasing shareholders. They're right. Not wrestling decisions any longer. To talk about what's best for wrestling or for an angle in the creative decisions that are being made in Connecticut, it would be a misnomer. And that's not an insult to them. They're a public company. Wall Street is very fickle, and they have to answer to the shareholders. Ultimately, it's a publicly owned company. Ultimately, they are the bosses. So we don't want anything edgy. We don't want anything controversial. We have to stay kind of squeaky clean to please the very fickle finger of Wall Street. There is somebody in Titan Tower, just to add to the level of what we're discussing here, someone in Titan Tower responsible for calculating the amount of television time in minutes given to non-whites so that they can have an equitable diversity ratio as a public company. So booking decisions, television time decisions, have nothing to do with wrestling. Sometimes they need a female or non-white to tip that scale a little bit for some more parity, for some equity in their diversity. So I say that not to disparage them. This is what they have to do as a public company, where diversity is a big issue now and race. But this is how some decisions are being made. So to say, well, how could they go with this individual? My God, did I need a promo that long from her? Well, they did, but not for the reasons you're thinking of or are even aware of. It's a public company, different ballgame. Got to judge them according to companies like Apple or Google. They have the same responsibility
right.
to the public. Yeah,
absolutely. And one might almost say, to use a random phrase off the top of my head, that they're focused on trying to do what's best for business. For example,
yeah.
So that's what comes into play when you're looking at Wall Street and everything. In the spirit of the U-shoot questions that sometimes come in, here's one of the weirder ones that you're going to get. I'm going to go back to the first night we were ever on the air, January 14th, 2007, when we were trying to establish that we were going to take on all kinds of wacky topics. We debated the subject, going back to what KL and Fry did in 92 in WCW. Remember the whole thing with the bonuses to the best match of the night? And the whole thing, we actually had a philosophical discussion. Could wrestling be an Olympic sport? Could it be a thing, you know, the Bulgarian judge holds up an 8.5 for athleticism, 9.5 for brutality, et cetera? I mean, if you look at it through that kind of prism, Should we not be sending guys maybe to the Olympics in Rio this year to compete for professional wrestling? I mean, if we're doing synchronized swimming and other things like that, you almost you could kind of look at this through a gold medal prism, could you not?
Let me ask you, beyond that question, how on earth is wagering permitted on wrestling? Where did this come from? All of a sudden, nowhere, a year ago, they're talking about the odds. The odds for something that isn't a competition. There's a panel of people deciding something. I mean, can I bet on what my wife is going to make for breakfast tomorrow?
It's not totally recent, though, Sean, because let me go back to something that I specifically remember. I specifically remember WrestleMania 22, hearing that one of the offshores had odds on Vince and Trump. Kind of funny to be talking about Trump today for how much he's in the news, but this being for wrestling, I remember joking about that at the time. If I'm Donald Trump, I walk into Ford Field that day and I say to Vince, hey, change of plans. I'm getting my head shaved. I got $5 million down on myself at $5 million to $1 offshore, because everybody knew the way that match was going to go. So you're right. Who's to say that you couldn't load up and go the other way if you were part of the inside?
That's insane. Vegas giving odds on wrestling. Have we not seen the tip of the iceberg on this controversy? When is this thing going to come out about how many people up in Titan Towers have been padding their incomes by this information?
That is something that's kind of waiting to happen. But in the sense of possibly, again, regarding these guys, you know, as we do, it seems like, again, there's a lot of respect for folks in gymnastics and other things like that, that if you think about it, in a lot of ways have to do with wrestling. But again, I have to tell you this is your actual day job. I'm sure you get this from a lot of people outside the business of, oh, you're producing stuff with wrestling. Those fake wrestlers. Again, people should be executed by their genitals if they use that word anymore, as though it means anything. I get so sick of that. But, I mean, it's like half joking, half tongue-in-cheek when I say the Olympics. But, I mean, could something like that basically educate the outside world a little bit better about how much this has in common with things that are much more respected?
No, probably not. I just think it's the bastard child of entertainment, and it's always going to be. I don't know how people couldn't have at least a base respect for, you could start with the schedule that these guys have to keep, the conditioning. There's no season,
sure.
As you know. They're 52 weeks, 365. There's no off season. So they're athletes to the nth degree. And then on top of that, imagine being a great athlete. Imagine being a great athlete at your sport, whether it be football or basketball. You're one of that, whatever, 2% of the world that can compete competitively. And then you get cut because, well, you just can't talk well enough. Could you imagine? Football players don't have to endure that kind of scrutiny. Somebody who can, you know, have 14 sacks a season, no one's going to come up to them and say, listen, you just don't have the charisma we wanted on the stick when you were interviewed after the game. So we're going to be sending you back down to Florida to work in something called NXT. So there's a whole level of respect that anyone that watches traditional sports should have for professional wrestlers. Having said that, I don't think they're ever going to be able to lose that stigma of the big fat guys bouncing around in their underwear. It's lowbrow. When I talk to anybody in the traditional, and hardly anybody in my world of legit entertainment and film and television, nobody knows what I do outside. Nobody's ever heard of this company. Nobody knows what Kayfabe Commentaries is. If they ask about, yeah, I know you own, so what's that company? What is this deal that you own? What is the story? There's two hurdles I give them before I get to professional wrestling. I say I own a production. And
mm-hmm.
Sometimes at a loud wedding, that's it. That doesn't go any further. Then sometimes it's, well, what do you do? What do you produce? What stuff? So then the second hurdle is, well, we do interview-based formatted programming with professional athletes. And that's the second hurdle. And if that hurdle is hopped over, I say, listen, you either get it or you don't get it. It's professional wrestling. And usually within 5 or 6 seconds, we're on to another topic.
I can understand.
Wrestling, interesting. You ever do Hulk Hogan? You ever do Hulk Hogan? Coffee's good here.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can imagine that you get that because, again, as I say, we're not a show that deals in wrestling exclusively or even majorly. You know, when our theme is nothing is off topic. So, I mean, we may hit some, you know, boring NPR stuff from time to time, try to make it less boring, but, you know, do some serious stuff. But if you do any kind of wrestling at all, sometimes that's enough for some people to put a stigma on you. So I get where you're coming from because you're completely immersed in it, and I can only imagine what it's like dealing with people on that level. But it's a shame that those people may or may not ever get exposed to some of the great products you got coming out. In our remaining time here that we have, we got about a 3-minute window here. What do you got coming out? I know you got another in your ongoing series with Jim Cornette coming out. What are some of the things that people should be paying attention to imminently with Kayfabe Commentaries?
Well, this month we launched our new series, Raven's Wrestler Rescue. If you head over to shootinterviews.com. You can check out our trailers for Raven's Wrestler Rescue, the first ever wrestler makeover show, which means we'll probably be on the WWE Network in 6 weeks. We have another addition to our Timeline series covering the year 1998 with head writer at the time, Vince Russo. So you'll get to hear the genesis of all the things that became known as the Attitude Era, whether it be Mankind's Mr. Sacco or Vince getting hit with the bedpan in the hospital room. All that stuff was 98. And what else? Yeah, got another edition of Back to the Territories with Cornette coming out. We're going to cover the AWA with Greg Gagne next month. Good stuff. We always have stuff happening. Check us out on Twitter or Facebook or sign up for our newsletter, and we'll keep you posted on the kind of programming we have to offer.
Wonderful, and I know it'll be very timely with Greg Gagne because I know he'll be getting into, I'm sure, a great amount about the late, great Nick Bockwinkel with his recent passing from the scene here. So all the Bockwinkel marks like myself will certainly enjoy that. But again, as I anticipated, Sean, the conversation did not disappoint. Very great to get to delve into this stuff with you, and would appreciate the chance to get to do so subsequently here. Keep up with what you got going on over there. Love the product, and best of luck with all things Kayfabe Commentaries.
Love you for loving it.
Well, as I said, appreciate the quality from you here today, sir, and keep up the great work over there. Really appreciate the chance to get to talk to you. And again, for everybody tuning in here, welcome. We appreciate you checking out this great conversation.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.